Pay attention. We can be real informal. All I can do is tell you about my own personal experiences. Not what I read. And I can tell you that nothing exists the way it appears. Everything is an appearance. And the trap is we get pulled into the appearance. We react to it. We feel hurt. We feel slandered. We feel as if something is wrong. We have emotions and they become negative because we're falling for a false premise. And the false premise is the world is real. In fact, the world is not real. Neither are you. What we have to do is stop reacting to anything. And the only way to do that is to discover who you are. When you discover your true nature, when you awaken to your true nature, everything becomes perfectly clear. You're at peace. If something works out, it works out. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But you don't look at it that way. Your feelings have been transmuted. You no longer feel what human beings feel. You just have a great love for all things, a great compassion. And you know that the substratum of all existence is harmony, peace, emptiness. And you feel wonderful all the time. What can disturb you if you're at peace? If you found true peace, what can possibly disturb you? The world comes and goes. One day the world is like this, the next day it's like that. But what has it got to do with you? Nothing. You're free. You are not the world. You are not your body. You are not your mind. You are total freedom, total joy, total love. You have to awaken to this fact. It's the truth. Science is beginning to see this more and more. They're beginning to see that the only thing permanent in life is change. We speak many words. We take many actions. But to what avail? Does it matter in the end? We build our life. We own possessions. We father children. And what happens at the end? Poof, it's all gone. Everything just disappears. There's nothing. So what's the purpose? People say, I'm making this world a better world for my children. They're just dreaming. The world will never be better, it'll never be worse. The world just is a dream of existence. And it's like this one day, it's like another day. But you are not the world. You have to awaken to that fact. You are not your thoughts. You are not your karmic expressions. You are not your inclinations from past lives. These things appear real as long as you believe in them. As an example, if you believe in the devil will appear to you. Because you are creating the devil yourself. If you believe in that God, the God will appear to you. As for instance, Ramakrishna believed in the God Kali. Kali used to become very real to him. And he used to dance and sing with Kali. And this was true as far as he was concerned. But he created the Kali. And that's why nobody else was able to see her but him. And that's how we create our lives. Think of the things you fear in your life. Say you fear becoming sick. You fear poverty. You fear getting divorced. You fear getting married. Whatever you fear is a concept created by your own mind. There's no question of should I get married or shouldn't I get married. It doesn't matter. What matters is how you react to it, how you see it, what you expect of it. This is true of every aspect of your life. It's what you've been trained to believe since you were a little kid. It first started in kindergarten. Your teachers brainwashed you. Your family brainwashed you. The outside world brainwashed you. The system brainwashed you. And here you are. You're filled with ideas, concepts, notions, feelings, attitudes. And that makes you what you are, miserable. As soon as you wake up, all that disappears. Nothing can ever happen to you that has a destructive nature. There is absolutely nothing that can ever destroy you. You cannot be destroyed. Your body may appear to vanish, but that's like a dream. You dream about yourself, you're doing something, and you get shot, and you disappear, but then you wake up. So my question to you is, what do you believe about yourself and about the world? What's most important to you? This is why I feel that a spiritual path, not necessarily this one, but a true spiritual path should be the first thing of importance in your life. Why? Because it wakes you up. No matter how good of a life you live, you may become the richest and most famous person on earth. You will have to experience the other side of the same coin one day and be the poorest, most miserable person on earth. That's the way it works. You may say to me, my neighbor never has any problems. It's like he fell into a pot of gold. Everything he touches turns into money. He's as healthy as a horse. He's got a beautiful wife, a big house, everything you can possibly need. And look at me. And I know that guy's life hasn't changed in 40 years. You're making the wrong conclusion. He has earned this karmically. And if he doesn't pull away from it, he might spend his whole life in goodness, human goodness. But then he will be drawn back again by the law of karma, which is in his mind, and he doesn't know it. And this time, he will be a homeless person. And whatever he does, he won't be able to make a dime. He'll try his best. But he'll always be poverty stricken. He won't be able to earn a dime no matter how hard he tries. This is why we should never judge. You have no idea what your neighbor is going through. You never say he or she has a wonderful life and look at mine. Why am I poor? Why am I sick? Why am I this one? Why am I that one? The idea is to wake up. Not to look at yourself. Not to feel sorry for yourself. Not to compare yourself with others. But to awaken. When you awaken, something happens that is unexplainable. There are no human words to explain. When you awaken, you just understand. Not even understand. You know, you feel. And those words are inadequate. You become divine harmony. You are no longer fooled by person, place, and thing. You no longer react. As an example, someone tells you, oh, you won the lotto, you won $50 billion. It's okay. You do not become a slave to that. Someone tells you, you lost $50 billion. Same thing, same reaction. You do not become a slave to that. What happens in the human life does not matter. When you know who you are, you do not say it does not matter. You simply exist. You exist as yourself. You're at peace. No one can ever take the peace away from you. No matter how hard you try. You're not fooled by things. rather what you do is you give of yourself. You can give yourself because you become the living self. And therefore you can give yourself away. And you're still there. For you become the infinite self, the divine mother, omnipresence, total oneness with all things. So you can give of yourself, and yet you're always there. When Ramana Maharshi was being robbed by robbers, his devotees wanted to attack the robbers. And he said, no, no, no. It's our dharma to be what we are. And it's their dharma to be what they are. We should not interfere in their dharma. Therefore, give them what they want. And that's very profound. We are spiritual people. The world is not. Therefore, we act in accordance with spiritual principles. What this really means is we as human beings become last, not first. That's what Jesus meant when he said, those who go first will be last, and those who are last will be first. You have to develop a great humility. Do not long for anything. Do not long to be famous or rich or great. And do not say, I want to be poor and have nothing either. They're both wrong. Just be yourself. When you are yourself, you will be amazed how the universe takes care of you. It's like a body with vitamins and medicines. Your body, you know, is a natural healing factory. And you really know that to heal itself. But when we start taking too many vitamins and not enough sugar, when we start taking medicines too much, the body says, well, you've made that into your God. So now you've got to depend on it. And then you have to keep gulping vitamins for the rest of your life or you get sick. Really, think about that.
Become a crazy
addict. Become a crazy addict, it doesn't matter. But think about those things. You've got to depend upon yourself to take care of everything. Now yourself is yourself. There's one self. So we take care of each other. But you don't think of that. When you think of others, you're making a mistake. The feeling will come to you one day that you are all others. There are no others, it's just yourself. Appearing as others. So how do you treat others? How do you treat yourself? You don't think about it. you did not say that person is worthy and that person is not. So I'm going to help this person and that person. You give of yourself automatically. You do not think about it. Because everything is yourself. And that includes the mineral kingdom, the vegetable kingdom, the animal kingdom, the human kingdom, and everything else you don't understand. It's all part of the one. What you do to the one, you do to everything. How you treat one person, that's how you treat the whole universe. Because everything is one. Now, these four principles I gave you, back to the four principles, have to do with all these things. You're supposed to ponder these things. How do you work with these principles? First, who can tell me what they are? Good. Okay. That's about right, yeah. Okay. Now you said them correctly, in a way. But it's like you're reciting a lecture.
That's because we're just learning to try to apply
it. But it's the way you say it to yourself. As soon as you open your eyes in the morning, I'll speak in the first person. You have to say to yourself, I feel and realize and understand that everything, say everything twice, is a projection of my mind. And think about what that means. Forget about the other three. Work on that. Everything. I feel that. I realize that. I understand that. That everything is a projection of my mind. And then you may think of the problems you have, if you have any. And you say to yourself, if everything is a projection of my mind, where did these problems come from? Whatever they may be. You then realize why they came from me. I projected them, I created them. And then you say, who is this I that created them? See, now you get into the meaty part, to the substance. Who is the I that created all this delusion in my life? Where did the I come from? Who gave it birth? My mind. Where did my mind come from? The I. Why, they're both the same. The I and my mind are the same. And that's a whole new revelation. You think along these lines. Where did the mind I come from? And to whom does it come? And you follow it deep, deep within yourself. If you do it correctly, you will realize there is no I. There is no mind. So there are no problems. And it'll be over. and you'll start laughing. You'll actually start laughing at yourself. You'll start to think, I fear this and I fear that. And once you get into that consciousness, something will happen to actually physically relieve you of the problem, or what you think is a problem. As long as you believe in your mind that there's a problem, whether it's little or big, doesn't matter, they're both the same. But as long as you believe you've got a problem, you'll have a problem. And it will grow. And you can't change it. It may appear that you change it, but it turns into something else, of a worse nature. When you try to work with the problem itself, never try to work with the problem, but ask where the problem came from. How did I get it? How did I get this birth? Where does it come from? That's a problem. The birth's the problem. Because you believe you were born, you have the problem. And you can go on and on and on. That's how you work with the principle. Everything. I feel and understand that everything is a projection, a manifestation of my mind. Who's mine? My mind. Who's mine? I'm mine. I am mine. Who am I? Who am I who has this problem? And as you ask yourself this question, you will begin to feel better and better and better. You will actually begin to feel better. And as you feel better, the problem becomes less and less important. And it will vanish. This is great psychotherapy. It works. If psychiatrists gave this to patients, they wouldn't have to give them any drugs. So you understand, you feel that everything is an emanation of your mind, or it won't exist. All existence, from the smallest atom to the greatest cosmic galaxy, it all comes out of your mind. But even if I tell you this, you still feel that something is real, don't you? You feel that something is real. You may say the sun is real. You may say, well, God is real. You may say an atom is real. But you do not comprehend that you are creating these things. They are all a project of your mind. If you didn't have a mind, you would not have these concepts. That's why we are told to annihilate the mind, to kill the mind. No mind, no concepts. All these ideas come as you begin to realize that everything is a projection of your mind.
Can you say the self is real, or is real a term that doesn't exist?
Well, if you say the self is real, you don't really mean it. If you meant it, you wouldn't have to say it. But you can say it when you're training yourself, because it makes you feel better. It helps you grow. It's been insane that my world is real, or my problem is real. It's better to say the self is real than to say that.
What better would it be?
To keep silent.
But nothing.
Don't even say that. Say nothing. When you ask yourself the question, where does the mind come from? Or where do my problems come from? And you keep still, that's real. The emptiness is real.
And isn't the emptiness the same as the self?
Yes. But when you speak, you spoil it to an extent.
That's right, because the self doesn't know.
When you say the self is real, it becomes personal. When there's silence, it becomes omnipresent. Silence is always the best policy. After you say all those things to yourself. And it's in the silence that your problems just dissolve. Try it, it really works. When you keep still, after saying all these things, your problems will dissolve by themselves. Do not think, I'm getting rid of my problems. Because that enhances the problems. Do not think about the problems at all. But work on yourself. To see your own reality. And in reality, there are no problems. Yet I also know to most people, no matter how many times I say this, your problems are very real to them. And you've got a hold of them like a vice. You really feel the problems. So to those people I say, to the extent that you can realize that your mind has created these problems, in reality you are mindless, to that extent when your problems begin to dissolve. But do this when you wake up. When you open your eyes in the morning, don't go through the four principles all at once and say, I'm finished knocking, don't worry about my problems. Take one at a time. Even if you do not get to the second one that morning, an hour or two has passed and you're working on the first one, that's good. You can work on these things all your life, if necessary. It's better than worrying about your problems. But take them one at a time. Now I go to the second one. And you work on the second one just like in the first one. Well, what's the second one? Did you say Sam? But it's the way you say it to yourself that counts. Use your own words that are comfortable for you. You have to sort of say something like this. I perceive. I feel. I understand that I was never born, or I am unborn. I do not prevail. All my existence does not exist. And I will never disappear.
Do you say, I perceive or I understand before your mind or just what it says?
Whatever's more appealing to you. Whatever you can work with. But let yourself know that you perceive in your own this form of your fear.
And that's how I think
it would be more honest to say, I'm beginning to perceive, or... That there's no beginning. As soon as I am beginning, you begin and begin and begin every day. It never ends. Stand up for the truth. You can see there's something within me that perceives.
Mm-hmm.
There's something within me that knows. I was never born. I did not prevail. And I will never disappear. And I am that one that knows. So you start working on that. What does this mean? I was never born. I am unborn. It sounds like a contradiction because you say, my father and mother gave me birth. This appears to be true. Who gave them birth? My grandmother, my grandfather. They go all the way back. Who gave them birth? Who gave them birth? And you go back to the beginning. Where did the first man and woman come from? Who started this? Who started the human race? Who started the idea of birth? Now don't come up with your answers. Because they're mind answers. You can say Adam and Eve, God. Somebody told you that. You learned it from reading the Bible. But is it true? Where did God come from who created everything? So you go back to the beginning. And you can say to yourself, it's like saying, what came first, the chicken or the egg? The tree or the seed? It's the same thing, what came first, the man and the woman? How did they both get together? Who made them? Then you will realize that they don't exist. Nothing gave you birth. Because the whole origin is false. That's what I call false imagination. The whole origin of birth is false. It's a dream. It doesn't exist. Therefore, I do not exist the way I appear to be. And you go right back to the first premise. Then who am I? If you're always going back to self-inquiry, who am I that exists? If I am not the body, am I my thoughts? I can't be my thoughts because they keep on changing, changing. Then who am I? And you keep silent for a while. You know it's working when you start getting a quiet, loving feeling. You start to feel peace that you have not felt before. And you start to feel that all is well.
So didn't you say, for example, I or the self, what if you say, like, I am the eternal man? Even that is a kind of mind.
Yes, it is. It's a temporary help. Because the mind creates it.
So, no, so again, knowing
is the
inner man.
Yes. But you will begin, if you do this often enough, this is why I have to do this every day when you wake up. Pretty soon you start to feel something. Really. you will feel a happiness that you never felt before, an extreme happiness. And you couldn't care to drop the bomb on your head. You would feel this happiness because you will know that you can't die. See, right now they're just words. But you will actually know someday that you just can't disappear. Nothing can kill you. Kill is just a word that means something that you're accepting. It's just an ignorant word. We make up words and we put feelings behind them. Say it to yourself for a while, see how ridiculous it sounds. Kill, 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 kill. It's just an English word that human beings make up to connote some kind of danger. But the word has no power except the power that you give it yourself. When the mind is silent, then reality comes of its own accord. When you're thinking, 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 then the world has got you. And you become worldly again. So self-inquiry causes the mind to be quiet. And after you work on that, you go on. I do not prevail. So you say to yourself, you mean my entire existence since I was a baby until I die means nothing? And then you say to yourself, I have just proven that I was never born because I've gone way back to the beginning. So if I were never born, how can I prevail? What prevails? Who prevails? And you will see it's the mind that prevails. The mind wants existence, wants strength, wants power. It makes you believe that you are a body. You ask yourself, to whom comes the mind? Where did the mind come from? Who gave it birth? How did it originate? What is its source? And keep quiet. Keep still. And you will begin to laugh. Because you will actually feel, even for a moment, that there is no mind. You will actually feel no mind. In the beginning it may last for a moment or two. But as you practice every day, those moments of no mind will become greater and greater and greater and greater. And then you go on, you will say, I will never disappear. So now you're laughing again because you realize who disappears. That which never existed disappears. But I am no mind. So how can I disappear? And this becomes very meaningful for you. And as you do it every day, you become stronger and stronger in mindfulness. And something happens that's so beautiful that I can't describe it. You feel such love, such joy, such harmony, such bliss. The and you carry on. And what's the third principle? And say it the way you're supposed to say.
Everything.
You begin with I shall.
Oh,
so easy we forget. You're gonna feel it, you're gonna say. Something in me feels, understands. The egolessness of all things. All these principles are alike. Did you come to that conclusion then? They all have the same source, nothing. But you have to work with them until you get there. I feel and understand the egolessness of all things. And you say all things, not just some things, but all things. From the greatest galaxy to the minutest atom. Nothing has an ego. If it has no ego, it has no source. Because to have an ego, it has to be a source. And just by realizing this great truth, you become free immediately. It blows your mind. It's like a Zen koan. All of a sudden something snaps in your mind. And your mind is gone. Because it has no source. Since there's no ego. It never existed. And you feel so good. This is a worldly thing. And you are none of this world. So you react completely differently to things like that. When I discuss these things with you, is to make conversation. But it doesn't exist. It will come and go. Whether there's a war or there's not a war, the fact remains you're still going to die. So what's more important? To discuss who's good and who's bad in the world, or to find out your true self? And become free from everything.
I just meant, would it help something like that not matter?
Of course it helps, because it makes them disappear.
Yeah. Yeah.
You realize it's part of the mind.
I never mentioned
it. Like the blanket. Like the radio.
And to say he's egoless doesn't mean it in the way we would say that, but it means he has no source that we came from nothing.
How will your peers does not exist? Just like your body, same thing. See, when you say, I am not the body, you're not speaking of your body. You're speaking of the body, the universal body. Nobody is the body.
So you can say, I am is not the body.
Yes, you can say that. That's why I tell you not to use that too much, because you make it too personal. You're still into yourself as an individual. When you read in the textbooks, I am not the body, I am not the mind, they're referring to the universal body and the universal mind. That there's nobody, nobody, nobody.
Like a minstrel show. Yeah.
Nobody exists. That sounds ridiculous to the average person. Now you may say, what does this do for me? It does everything for you. If you are creative in music or in art or anything else, you'll become a greater musician, a great artist, without wanting to, without going after it. Your body will do what it's supposed to. There'll be no karmic attachment. As an example, if you're a great artist and a great musician, a great carpenter, a great loafer, a great homeless person, and you go after it humanly, this is what is holding you to the earth. And you're going to have to come back again and again and again, because you've made yourself earthbound, don't you see? Anything that you attach yourself to pulls you back to the earth, whether it's good or bad. If you hate something, it's the same as if you love something. It pulls you back to the earth. You've got to let go. If you read that lesson on non-attachment I gave you last week, it explains it all. It's not being indifferent. It's just a letting go, because you know, I am my brother, my brother is me. I am everything. So I do not have to attach myself to anything. The egolessness of all things. And now I go to the last principle, which is what?
I feel.
Good. And I am. No, you say I perceive and understand what realization is. I know something within me understands and feels what self-realization is, and you keep still. Then the thoughts will come to you that the only way to find out is through negation. So you can say to yourself, it's not the sun, because the sun is a projection of my mind. It's not the moon, same thing. It's not my husband or my wife. It's not my body, it's not my organs. It's not the same. It's not peace, it's not the war. And everything you name, it's not. So when you get tired of naming things, you keep sound. And that's what it is. Everything is sound. All four principles end in sound. They're all the same. Any questions about that?
Yes, I have a question concerning two things that you said, which I have difficulty with. And one of the things you said was, never deal with a problem.
Right.
And I know that if you concentrate on the positive things that you're speaking about, that's the essential teaching, say, to express all the ideas that you've already talked about today. I realize that that is the energy that must be expended. But still, in this period of life that we have, as we make these statements, and as we move toward this goal, which I can accept, and this theoretical idea, which I accept, this abstract idea, still there is the life to be lived. And there are issues to deal with.
Yes.
So it seems to me that if you say, don't deal with a problem, this leads to enormous problems.
On the contrary, you're separating both. You're putting them in two categories. But they're really one. As an example, say somebody cheated you and you sue them in court. When you sue somebody and you're getting involved in something like that, you're setting up an energy Even if you win the case, you're going to have to sue somebody else, and then sue somebody else. And it never stops, because you have to create a pattern for yourself. But if you go about it the other way, if you know the truth about yourself, you also know the truth about the guy who cheated, because you both won.
Well, all right, let me give you another example, though. Let's say that we're all here, and we all stay here, and tomorrow, and we have no money. And tomorrow we're hungry.
Mm.
We're all hungry in the morning, and we say, we're not going to deal with this problem. But because our hunger is so great and keeps mounting, we really can't think of anything else. And eventually, we can't think of any of these ideas you've told us about because we are so extremely hungry.
Your first premise is wrong. It doesn't work like that. It'll never work like that. If you are hungry, something will happen to appease your hunger. So what you're thinking about is you sit down, you do nothing. It doesn't work like that. When you know the truth, somebody will knock on the door and bring you food.
I don't know. I brought up the example a week or two ago about the Holocaust. And remember, I said how the attitude of the Jewish people, especially the rabbis, was that this is the God is living in the Nazis. God has manifested himself through Auschwitz, and the ovens, and so we must go along with this. Would you say that is the attitude that the Jewish people should have had?
On the contrary, because that's an attitude. I'm not talking about attitudes.
It's a problem to deal with.
I'm talking about realization. See, reading the Bible and making quotations is one thing. Being a living embodiment of the truth is another thing. So I'm not saying it's supposed to be passive. There are times that you're not passive.
Then you are saying deal with the problem.
On the contrary. If you are in the truth, the problem will deal with itself.
Yes, but you're speaking of a state to which we are aspiring. And I grant you, what you say, I believe that would happen. But we're not in that state yet. We are not fully in the state because we cannot fully grasp it and manifest it.
If you take it personally and you work on yourself, as I said, you will do what's right. You will not be passive.
So you didn't exactly say don't deal with the problem, but just to realize that the problem doesn't really exist.
Yes.
There's a slight differentiation.
Your body will do the right thing by itself.
But the body,
it's not a matter of trying to think of it or not think of it. That's the easiest way to put it right there.
I don't see that at all. It's your mind that tells you to put on clothes and go out and find your food in the morning. Your body too, but it's the body and mind working together.
But wouldn't what Christ said when he said, put ye first the kingdom of heaven and all these things will be added unto you, isn't that sort of the same thing you're saying?
Yes,
if you dwell on self inquiry or self realization, somehow those things will be taken care of, maybe even by the body.
Well, wasn't it Christ who said also render to Caesar what is Caesar's? And that's the critical point there.
Yeah.
See, what you're talking about, there is no argument with the concept, the idea, and the goal, and the abstract reality of it. I am talking about the interim period as we live in our daily bodies through the day. Yes. And that's why I bring up these problems of the fan, which I did the other day, and the food, and as examples of these things that we have to deal with every moment.
Your body and your mind are motivated by karma. The law of karma takes care of them. But you are not your body. If you are aware that you are not your body, right action will pursue.
You mean you can be aware that you're not your body and yet your body will go out and get food?
Exactly.
But you would know that you are not the doer.
But aren't there, you say if you are aware, now those are your words, are aware that you are not the body.
Mm.
But I would say, from my understanding of the teaching, there are degrees of awareness. If you are fully and completely and absolutely and totally and wholly aware that you are not the body, then, okay, I grant you that. But there are these degrees of awareness, and if you are not at that particular state, then you must render to Caesar what is Caesar's.
In reality, there are no degrees. So you either are or you're not. If you think you're not, then you have to fetch for yourself. If you think you are, you'll think about these things, then you'll go do something. But you won't be doing it, it'll do itself.
That's what I was going to say. The answer to this, to me, is what Rob was telling us before about not being the doer. The realization that you're not the doer is even what Christ was talking about. That as you dwell on the self, on realization, your body will continue to do whatever is necessary karmically. But well, your realization that you're not the body and you're not the doer doesn't mean it doesn't get done.
Okay, well, now we're getting down to the nitty-gritty. All right. So then what you're suggesting even is this. Let's talk about tomorrow morning.
Mm.
And I'm hungry. So my body mind says, you know, go out, try to find somebody to get breakfast. But all the time that I'm doing this, I can still think, I am not doing this.
No.
I am not going to get the money.
No.
I'm not going to be eating it. None of it exists.
You don't think of it.
No,
but
no.
Both can exist simultaneously.
You don't think about it.
See what's going to happen when you work on the principles, and if you have hunger in your body, you will automatically, spontaneously, go get food.
But you won't be dwelling.
Your mind will be somewhere else.
Or could you say, like, okay, here I am going to La Brea Bakery, but this is all a dream.
You won't even say it.
Yeah, you wouldn't.
See, take my life, for instance. When I get up in the morning, I have no idea what's going to happen the next day, or the day, or during the day. But I'm active, and I'm not active. I do certain things, but I don't do purposely. It happens spontaneously. I didn't ask to teach classes like this. It happened. I never asked for anything, but it happens. Because my body does it spontaneously, but my mind is not aware of it, and I'm not involved in it. But I'm fed, I live in a house, I come to these meetings, but I never say I'm going to do it.
You don't plan.
I don't plan. I may plan a couple of hours in advance or something like that, but I have no long drawn out plans. But everything works out. I know it's hard to perceive. It's really hard to perceive on the
way. Well, my second point is related to this one. And you said at the beginning of your speech, you quoted Ramana when he was being robbed.
Uh-huh.
And you said that he said that told his followers to give, to allow the robbers to take what they wanted.
Yes.
And that was their karma. And
their dharma.
And it was his karma to have it and to give it.
Yes.
Why couldn't it also be his karma to protect what he had?
Because it was not his dharma, it was not his way.
Oh, what is the difference between dharma and karma?
Dharma is the way things are.
Dharma
is the truth.
The truth
is the way things are.
Yeah.
Oh.
I mean, another enlightened teacher could have said anything. Right? I mean, they're both the two sides of the same coin of reality, right?
In a way, that's true.
Just say, go kill him, or go... You know, I mean, not kill him, but I mean, you know, in reality, there's no difference.
Well, you're right. It's like in the Bhagavad Gita with Arjuna.
Yeah, if that was...
When Krishna told him to go fight.
Or go sue them. Or go fight them.
Yeah.
Or go sue them.
So he could have said, let's protect what we have.
Yeah, and they're really both the same.
But he said...
That wasn't his...
He said, this is not our path.
This is
not his path. Same dharma. See, I was like... I had the same question because I thought dharma and karma were the same thing.
No.
So they're not. So the dharma would be the teaching to teach them not to resist. But the karma might be to beat the shit out of them.
Yes.
But if you were holy enough, you would go with the dharma. But that would take really...
It depends on the path that you're on. People are on different paths, I guess. But the highest teaching of all... Not only that, Krishna himself didn't have to fight, did he? He told Arjuna to fight.
That's right.
You see?
Well, it's easy to tell somebody else to fight.
Yeah.
Because he knew
what... For Krishna to go fight.
So when you get to the highest, there's peace.
There's no need to.
There's no need to anything.
Maybe to just show, maybe as a demonstration for somebody else, you could say fight or don't fight. I mean, as an extension.
For your students.
For your students.
It's like in the martial arts. When somebody becomes so proficient in the martial arts, I mean proficient, the highest they can never go. Higher than that, they do nothing. They don't even defend themselves.
They do less and less.
They go the other way. Just sit. They accept being killed.
Yeah.
There's nothing to fight. But Arjuna was not up there. He belongs to the warrior caste.
And so do we, or one of the Lord.
You belong to whatever you believe.
Castes are like beliefs.
So you belong to whatever you believe. It's all your mind. If you want to believe you've got to fight, then go fight. If you have to believe you've got to take care of yourself, because if you don't do it, who's going to do it? Then you've got to. You've got to do what you've got to do. But I'm speaking of the highest teaching, where everything is taken care of. Look at Ramana again as an example. When he was a boy, he would have been dead if it weren't for this mysterious power that took care of him. He just went into the jungle, went into a cave and sat there. He didn't know where his food was going to come from. He didn't even think about it. How he was going to take care of himself. It didn't enter his mind. He just sat motionless for days until a woman came up the hill and started to feed him.
But he was more or less born enlightened, and we're just struggling.
Well, I'm just speaking of the highest ideal.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to tell you, if you have trust and faith, there's a mysterious power that will take care of you and supply all you need.
Arnold, you've mentioned several times, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. But also it continues, render unto the Lord that which is the Lord. And that man does not live by bread alone, but every word which proceeded from the mouth of the Lord. So let us ask ourselves, what is Caesar? And what is the Lord? And what is the bread of life? To feed the body alone is not sustaining, but life does not proceed from the body alone.
That's a good point. Jesus himself never ran down to Caesar. He told that to the people.
Always
pass
it
on.
Better you than me.
I don't dispute that what you're saying at all. But my problem is with the acknowledgement of the bread part of it, again, the Caesar part of it, how one deals with that. And I think people have those concrete problems. Life in the world, dealing with the world as you all deal simultaneously with the work of the Lord and all of that. Why you pay your attention to the spirit. At the same time, we have these other problems. That's the crack.
Remember, Arnold, you're speaking from your point of view.
Ultimately, there are no problems. And if it's a matter of where we put our attention. Wherever we put our attention, that becomes our reality. So if we focus in on the bread, if we focus in on the Caesar. But what if we ask ourselves, what is the source of our life? Is it from Caesar? Is it from the bread? That's the question. So even if you solve the problem of the bread, then you are fed. But if you never know who you are, subsequent problems are inevitable.
That's true. I don't deny that.
So it's just one problem. So
it's true.
So it's not only finding out who we are, but it's also a matter of that there's a flow, and to realize that flow and to connect ourselves with that flow. And from that flow comes the bread. So it's not just us, but it's all things. it's not just us, but it's all things. So it's not just conquering that one problem. When you conquer the problem itself, all of the other problems get conquered.
Theoretically, but remember also in the past, and I've mentioned this, in every culture, in every time, whether it's Catholicism in the Middle Ages in the West, or whether it's the Buddhism in the East, because of the awareness of this problem, those who are in control have established communities, they have established ways in the world for the process to go on. And that's why these have existed. That's why monasteries do exist. That's why there are groups of teachers of Sufis throughout the desert everywhere, and that sort of thing. Arrangements are made for survival while the process is going on.
Even as those arrangements are made, they're not really made. They happen of themselves. And again, that's the flow. It's not
so you're speaking of appearances. That's how it appears to you. That's what I said in the beginning. This is your point of view. That's how you see it now. But it's not like that.
The ashrams themselves didn't say, well, let's make an ashram. They happened of themselves because the people that were involved of it were unfolding of themselves. Everything unfolds of itself. Our life should unfold of itself. But when we think we're the doer, then there are problems. Not that we don't do anything. It's not that we do nothing. It's not that we do. We be as we are, it unfolds of itself. There's no stopping of action, and there's no action.
Well, maybe it's just that. Let's try another tack. When I came here, Sam said to me several times that I should come here. This just happened. I didn't go to Sam. I didn't say, please tell me what to do, where to go. I didn't ask. I wasn't even aware that he was thinking of me. It came to me, just as the matter that you're speaking of. Come and go. And I did. Nevertheless, every week, I have to arrange to come here. So the two energies exist simultaneously on this plane, is all I'm saying.
No. This plane doesn't exist. But as long as you believe it does, because you're creating it. You're giving its power. You are the power source. When you take the power away, everything just is.
That kind of gets to a question that I have, which isn't really a question, and I kind of know that. I feel it's a little fruitless for me to ask questions. I'm just kind of doing it for conversation too, because I realize that I'm at a point where I'm just beyond questions, but everything is an emanation of the mind.
Mm. Yes.
But the mind does not exist.
Exactly.
So we have different levels here.
That's what I understand. Levels.
Okay. Well,
if you think about
all right, everything is an emanation of the mind, but the mind does not exist. Everything is an emanation of the mind as if it's a dream. However, the dream does not really exist. So one level is, first of all, everything is an emanation of the mind, thus there is a process which is a dream. Yet, the mind does not exist. The dream itself has no reality. It has reality. How do we put it? It's real, but it's not true.
It's better to ask questions to yourself than to make statements. When you come to this conclusion, you ask yourself, whose mind doesn't exist? Where did the mind come from? To whom does it belong? And you keep silent. Then your answer will be emptiness, nirvana, and you will know.
Well, what questions should Arnold ask himself?
The question that he's asking me, you should ask yourself, who has all these questions?
Yeah, like who has to get his act together with him?
All these things. You start with realizing that I have to do these things. And go back to the I and say, where did the I come from? one has to do all these things. And follow the eye through to its culmination, to its source.
Let me try another tack to express my these ideas. A parent has a child, and the child, let's say, is afraid of boogeymen or whatever, and you know the children have this fantasy mm-hmm. life. And I know as a parent, I mean, how you deal with children, and you if you have a little child and he's going to bed, you know very well that these fantasies that he's having. That they are not real. You know that they are going to have no substance. They're not going to have any substance in his future life or in your life. There is no substance to them whatsoever. Nevertheless, because you know he is a child and you know he is on a certain level, you go along with him,
mm.
and you know that he is moving gradually toward greater realization as he gets older and as the reality of the world, or the unreality, if you like, first becomes more apparent to him. But nevertheless, you have to deal with him on those levels. And that's why a parent will say, you know, oh, maybe I don't think that terrible man's going to come in the door. I really don't. And you talk to him about all of these things. And so you go along with him on his level. Oh, you know it's not real. And he knows it too in some ways.
But you're doing all that in the dream. It's all part of the dream.
That's true. But in doing it, you enable him to move to higher levels of realization. If you said to the child, I am not going to discuss this because there is no reality there, I am not going to do this, then you keep the child from moving.
That's the dream. What you're saying is the dream. But if you just wake up, all that doesn't exist. And you wouldn't have to do all those things.
What would you do to the child? What would you say to the child?
As long as you're in that position, what would you say?
What would you say if you were in a more, if you were deep in the reality of a house? What?
Yeah. I have two girls.
Yeah.
And when they were babies, I read books to them, and did what you said. But I realized I was not the doer. That's the point. I went through all that. It doesn't mean I'm not going to do anything at all. I realized I was just playing a part. I was not the doer, so I read them books, calmed their fears, and did what a father has to do. But I knew I am not the doer. That's the difference.
Yes, but in doing that, you help the girls to move to higher levels. It's the girls that I'm thinking about as being the important issue here. That's an example of, I'm using that as an example of our own position in life. People who are, Ms. Cope, you're on your way?
Yeah, go ahead. Thank you. Go on, please.
You going to play music?
Yeah.
When you realize that you are not the doer, your body will do whatever it has to come to do, came to this earth to do. Your body follows karma. And your body will do whatever you're supposed to do. But it's not you. And that can only be experienced.
We were just talking when you were out of the room, and I don't know if this is correct or not, but I said in a way, as I perceive it, it's taking an overview and knowing as you go through these bodily actions that it's the dream and your character in the dream, and you're watching yourself as if seeing as you're on a video, you know, but you know you're not, and you know that's you.
So you do all the worldly things, but you just say that I am not the doer.
You don't say that. If you have to say, then you are.
Sure.
You just come into that kind, you just realize that you are the universe and you're playing all the parts.
But like I'm so, we kind of have to say I'm not the doer.
Because so many of the other teachings would say that you are not the doer, but this isn't saying that. You know, we interpret it that way, but that isn't what it's saying.
Well, I agree with Arnold that there's levels, different levels that we're all at.
And it appears that way.
We seem to need words.
That's why you have to inquire for whom are their levels.
So you mean after I am not doing, you have to say, who is I?
No. When you know that you are not doing, you won't say anything.
But in the meantime, though, I seem to need to say what I'm about to do to remind myself, because I'm at a lower level, or I feel that I'm at a lower level.
Better.
I need words like that.
No, better to not say, I am not the doer. Because, see, that sets up a certain pattern. Better to ask yourself, who is the doer, than to say, I am not the doer.
That's a good point.
Yeah, see, that's the point. The point is that I am not the doer is not this practice. It's a question.
Because that's duality.
Well, it's not self-inquiry.
Well, you could lead to self-inquiry. You could say, who is I? I am non-existent.
When you're encountering something in the world, and you say, I am not the doer, that is not what this practice teaches. That's like a negation. You neither affirm nor negate this non-duality. You ask yourself, who is the doer? To whom does this come? Not, I am not the doer. Because in a sense, what you're saying is, I am, you're already affirming yourself. By saying, I am not the doer, you're saying, well, I exist, and then
well,
I
don't know. You could be saying, I am is not the doer.
That's different.
Well, right, but we also share that.
Yeah, but in your mind, what do you do? See, when I was saying in the Bible, it says, be still and know that I am God. Well, I got one impression when I was doing that, but when I said, be still and know that I am is God, I got a totally different impression.
Right.
Because I became God rather than a God outside of me.
There's no separation, right?
So when we slur that, we have to be very careful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Better to define it and say, I am. Or to whom does this come rather than.
Well, remember, you can never become God because God is you. You don't become anything because you don't exist as an appearance. So, remember a couple of weeks ago I mentioned that this is my confession. This is the way I feel about it. And to most people, it's ridiculous. It's a gobbledygook. It doesn't mean a thing. It doesn't seem practical in the beginning to most people. Because most people want something practical. They can improve their humanhood with. But the highest truth is, humanhood does not exist. And if you come to that conclusion, your life will be bliss.
But isn't the one of the purposes of something to ask the question that we're asking?
Yes.
We are aspiring.
Yes, but it's what things all about. But then you have to practice the things that I tell you. And watch what happens. In other words, you can't go home and get caught up in the world and forget about this until the next meeting. You've got to work on yourself. And you'll see what happens.
But I think as human beings, Robert, the reason Sally didn't say the fourth fundamentals was feeling like an actor or something is because we are just at the point of learning them and the grasping of each individual one will come later. It's very helpful that you tell us to like expand on each one and maybe just do one at a time. But if we know we're going to be questions
when we can't
have and what the four are,
then
we're going to be
a
one.
You know.
Otherwise, don't you have to start that way before they become automatic?
Yes. You work on one until you become a living embodiment of it. You can repeat all four to yourself. When you work on yourself, you take one at a time.
Right.
I'd like to write them down in your words, if I may. As succinctly as possible. Is that all right?
That's fine.
I'll need a pen.
No, these are the three vehicles.
I think I wrote them down, but a half combination.
Oh, thank you.
Every time it says it, well, we do it anyway.
Could you tell me the four as a
okay, number one. I understand, I feel, I perceive that everything twice.
Everything what?
But twice everything.
Yeah.
Two times. Everything. Everything. Emphasize the second everything. For the line under again. Is a manifestation of my mind.
The manifestation?
Of my mind. Number two. I feel and understand deeply that I am unborn. I do not prevail. And I do not despair.
I have died of despair.
Same thing. Number three, I feel and understand the egolessness of everything, of all creation. Number four, I have a deep understanding of what self-realization is. That's it.
It wasn't number four, the ending of that by what, it's in our last book.
That's how you work on yourself. Mm. Through negation.
Because you always said it differently. The way you told me was you can discover what self-realization is by what it is known.
Yes.
Or the natural.
If I were quoting from books, I would say it the same way all the time. And I say that it comes.
Yeah, but it always means the same thing. I mean, I have another one. Do I call it another time?
Now, when you said that we perceive, I have a deep understanding, and though we don't feel that, we say that.
It's good to say that when you wake up. Because it's not something going.
But I'm saying during the day, if we do the principle, we say the same thing.
You're going to sort of make it a little different. During the day, you can just think about that everything is a projection of your mind. But in the morning, it's good to say, I perceive.
Okay.
I understand. You know why? Because when you first open your eyes, you're not awake yet. And you're your real self. So you're actually confessing to yourself your real nature. And I perceive, I understand. And it goes deeper into the subconscious mind. But you just woke up, you're fresh, your mind is fresh. New ideas.
When I ask you those other beginnings of seeing that sort of thing, you more or less say it as a finality.
And during the day when the world has got you, you can just say, everything is a projection of my mind, everything. And leave the I perceive off.
It helped me when I understood what it meant when everything was sentient and sentient is ego. It helped me when you think it was no soul. Even though it's better to say, even though that helps my understanding, because then that makes me less beautiful. Everything. If I realize it has no source whatsoever, it's amazing. And because I was asking, well, how could a piece of the life I'm in the cave? Of course it doesn't. But you know, comes from that in the heart.
Yeah, but does the tree think I am?
But does the tree exist? See, it's the perception of your mind.
Well, I mean, some of the principles are easier for me than others. Everything is a projection of the mind. I can follow that. But I have no beginning. There's no feeling inside me that I don't have a beginning because I identify with the body.
I exist, remember? You work that I exist, that's the beginning. Of course, you can't say you don't exist. So you exist. And you say to yourself, I exist. And you put more space between I and exist as you keep going. I exist. And then you ask yourself, who is this I that exists? Where did it come from?
But the same, I was raised in fundamentalism, and my mother used to and still does ask me, where will you spend the eternity? And as a paternity, or in the future, you know, and I said, even then, I said, Mother, how could eternity be something that comes later? I mean, it has no beginning and no end.
What she said?
See, real satsang is not intellectual.
What is it, emotional?
It's not emotional. It's the reality of the person giving it. Whenever we have new students, they'll ask the same questions. But that's their perception. That's where they're coming from. And no matter what I say, they will never be able to see it until they become it. Because they're identified with their body. But you're getting more advanced. Because you're realizing things of a higher nature. That's good. That's a good sign.
I don't know. The more I know, the less I know.
That's good, because you're getting rid of your ego. The ego wants to know. It has to know. But when you begin to feel the less I know, that's a good sign for you. Because you know less about the world and more about the self.
I don't feel like I know anything.
That's good.
Even
keep it up. It happens.
Do you feel that your perceptions are different from a non-dual point of view since you've been coming to Satsang for quite a while?
Well, not particularly, because I've been aware of this teaching for a long time.
Non-duality?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I would say that since I've been coming here, there's a deeper quality of the awareness, but intellectually, I've been aware for a long time.
No, I don't mean intellectually. I'm just saying, well, it did basically do any difference.
I would say there's it has permeated myself more. My non-self.
Whoever had
it.
See, the more confounded you become, the more the ego breaks up. When you know it or not.
Does it, or doesn't it sort of become all right after this?
No, because it breaks up. When the ego is...